Welcome to the PR Moment podcast. Produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
This week on the PR Moment podcast, I'm interviewing Barbara Bates, global CEO at Hotwire. Barbara became CEO in May 2017 following Hotwire's acquisition of her agency, Eastwick. She was joint founder of Eastwick and ran the firm for 25 years before selling to Hotwire in what was the Eniro-owned firm's biggest acquisition so far. Hotwire has grown significantly since the acquisition and now has 250 staff in 12 different countries. A couple of plugs from me this week. The programme for our annual PR analytics event is now up, so go to the PR Moment homepage to find out more. And don't forget, the deadline for the PR Moment Awards is coming up, and again, go to the PR Moment Awards microsite to find out all the details. Barbara, welcome to the PR Moment podcast.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Now, you started your career as a TV reporter and quickly moved into PR. You set up Eastwick in 1991, if I'm not mistaken. Now, I'm no expert on the US PR market, but what's it like setting a PR firm up in the US?
You know, it's fantastic opportunity, especially if you're in the tech market, which I have been for most of my career. And as you know, the tech market has been a pretty healthy growth market. It has not missed some big down moments, but for the most part, it's been a good growth opportunity. There's quite a bit of competition. I would say San Francisco and New York, Chicago, areas of the states have huge numbers of agencies.
Right.
But I do think it allows for specialty. So I think it's a good opportunity.
When you say for specialty, you mean there's different niches within the tech.
Yeah. Some are straight up consumer, travel, financial. Obviously, we've been primarily tech, although I would say we now talk about ourselves working with all kinds of companies of shapes and sizes.
Right. That Eastwick was just a pure play tech PR firm.
Yes.
But with a broad portfolio. So you did all tech. You did B2B tech, consumer tech.
Yes.
Travel tech.
Yep.
Fintech, the lot.
Yep. Okay. Exactly.
And was that what happened? What was the growth path of that? Because you set up. Is it? Did you?
Yeah, we actually started when we started. There were three of us who started the business. And in fact, when we first told some folks that we knew that we had were starting the business, they said, "Oh my God, it's like the Witches of Eastwick." And that's when we said, "Oh, okay, that sticks." So that's actually how we got our name.
So you must have been scratching around for a name. Did you not know?
None of us wanted our name on the door. We'd seen that as being a mistake in the past. And so the timing was right where, he said, like the Witches of Eastwick, and we thought it stuck. And in fact, it was very funny because many of our clients referred to us as the witches. We made Halloween a big deal. We would send out Halloween cards every year. And so
it just kind
of made fun of it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you started Eastwick in a recession in 1991.
Yeah.
So I guess you went through the dot-com good times, the dot-bomb bad times, financial crisis of 2008. You're running that business for 25 years.
People look at me and say, "Oh my God, how have you done that for so long?" I say resiliency.
Is that a word?
Yes.
Because it's different running a business in good times, bad times, and somewhere in between.
Yeah.
What are the sort of vague lessons of all of that?
Yeah. I think it starts with being known for being really good at something.
Right.
I think actually specialists do better in times of where the market is poor than generalists because there are so many people you can compete with. But if you have a specialty, sort of your competitive field narrows. I also think we did a pretty good job of diversifying our portfolio. So from the very beginning, we worked with very large brands. Oracle in the U.S. was one of our first companies, and that was at the time, multi-millions dollar business.
Yeah.
So we always have had a portfolio of big brands and startups. And that means when budgets get cut, you know how to work on smaller budgets. And that always worked really well in our favor. Focus. You know, when you can focus and do something really well, then you stand out in a crowd. And even if there are fewer opportunities, you tend to get your more than your fair share of those
opportunities. It's a hard thing to do, though, isn't it? Because if you've got a client like Oracle with presumably a big old budget,
yep.
To then go after, and this is always the problem with that yep. type of thing, isn't it? To then go after a much smaller account, you know, you start thinking, well, is it even worth my time pitching for it? You know, you can, and you're saying it is, but
yeah.
it's a difficult thing as an agency to manage that, right?
I do think a lot of agencies have struggled with that. I think we were really lucky that from the very beginning, we had a business model that was built on servicing both types of clients. And a big part of that was being in Silicon Valley. If you don't work with startups in Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. you miss out on the entire ecosystem.
Yeah.
You miss out on working with VCs. You miss out on the next Ubers, the next Twitters, you know, all of that. So I think,
is that because you just don't know which ones are going to grow?
No. Right? Yeah. Yeah. And oftentimes some of them grow very quickly. Taking companies public is a very lucrative thing to do. And
so you had that in your
Oh, for sure. Okay, yes. Right. And we still do, actually. Right. I think we took three clients public this year, and we have a couple more that are just about ready to go public.
Okay.
So
that's quite different over here, because there are financial PR firms who do that for tech brands. You don't tend to get tech PR firms doing that for tech brands.
We do. We partner with IR firms, but for the most part, it's agencies like us who actually drive, the ramp up. Usually we tell clients 18 to 24 months before you go public, start acting like a public company.
Right.
So that communications is not just around financial communications.
Gotcha.
That's, yeah.
Okay. Now, just going back to the dot-com good times and the dot-bomb bad times. That was... We talk about difficult times now, but that was, you know, we went from the crest of a wave to the nastiest tick.
Overnight.
Yeah, exactly. So how on earth did you ride that?
Yeah, you have to make tough decisions. And I think the reason why we've done really well is we make decisions pretty quickly. And we literally overnight had to cut our staff in half.
Wow.
And... that's actually what allowed us. We were also pretty conservative in running our business. We were able, we had a lot of money in the bank. And one of the things I'm most proud of is in all the 25 years of running Eastwick, we had every year was profitable. One year was flat, no growth. But for the most part, we've been profitable every year.
Wow. In hindsight, that's really brave. But at the time, that's brutal, isn't it?
Oh, it is brutal.
Because when those sorts of things are happening, you don't know how long they're going to go on for.
Yep.
So when we look back now, we obviously had no choice but to make that decision. But at the time, you couldn't have known that. It was a judgment call.
Absolutely.
And presumably a very, very difficult one.
Yeah. Anytime people are involved like that, it's incredibly difficult. That's the hardest part of it,
totally.
Quite honestly.
I
would say, also I think we were smart business people. And we owed it to the company to do what we needed to do to make it a healthy business.
You wouldn't have survived.
And many of them did not. And some of the big high-flying agencies of the day back in Silicon Valley did not for a couple of reasons. They had really big staffs that they held on for too long, and they also had really big real estate commitments. And they couldn't – when they laid off half of their staff and they couldn't get – rid of their real estate leases, it put some of them under. So you learn a lot going through those ups and downs about what to do and what not to do.
Yeah.
You can
burn cash very quickly in a consultancy business.
Oh, you can. You really can. And I do think bravery is part of it. You have to, you got to be smart and have good advisors, but you also at some point have conviction and know what the right thing to do is.
Right. How long did the tough – so the dot – com good times lasted for how long were you on that?
Well, I would say for 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
For 10 years. And then literally overnight at the end of 2000, just at the end of 2000, beginning of 2001, it literally fell off a cliff.
Right.
And it was all concentrated around tech, and that was our world. So it impacted us tremendously and most of the agencies that we competed with.
And went over how long?
And actually, it impacted our clients as well because they all lost staff too. I would say it was pretty brutal for two years straight.
Okay. So not started, that long.
Yeah, started softening up a little bit, you know. But, I mean, it was pretty bad for the better part of, you know, 2 to 3 years for sure. Mm. And then it started a slow growth, but the growth was quite slow.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until 2000, you know, we saw 2006, 2007 pretty
wow.
healthy.
And then 2008 came along.
And then 2008 came along. Although, interestingly enough, the larger market suffered more in 2008 to 2010. Our business did not suffer as much.
When you say the larger market, you mean the
non-tech economy.
Market.
The economy. Okay. Right. The economy in general suffered more with the financial crisis hitting in 2008. But tech companies, I mean, our business still dropped, yeah. and it was hard, but nothing like the dot-bomb era.
No. Okay. But it was tech was relatively resilient during that time, 2008.
Yeah, and I think partly is a lot of the tech companies had been hoarding cash for a long time.
Right. And they could at last spend it.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, a lot of companies didn't go public during that time frame, but okay. There was, you know, it's why shortly after the financial crisis of 2010, you started really seeing the market tick back up again.
Right. So your lessons are what? Quick?
I say make quick decisions.
Yeah.
Be clear at what you're really good at and focus on that. Diversify your portfolio.
Okay. Now, tech PR as a sector, and we touched on it there, since 2008 or thereabouts, seems to just grow and grow. Now, I suppose maybe that's because every firm becomes a tech firm. I don't know.
But I think it's part of it.
It's a sector that's been pretty good for you. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, I think a lot of people continue to look, are we in a bubble? I don't think we think we're in a bubble. I think it's the new norm. But I do think that there...
Find some wood and touch it.
Yes, yeah. Really. Exactly. But, you know, we constantly look about, you know, do we feel as strong about next year as we do this year? I said no this year from last year.
Yeah.
And yet it's been incredibly strong year. As I mentioned, more companies going public. Our portfolio has grown tremendously. But I think there's some market conditions that are happening around tech. But I also think that there are some general trends that are happening that help an agency the size of Hotwire grow okay. and sort of be very popular right now, if I'm to be honest. And that's because the agency of record model has been sort of dismissed in that large firms now want to work with a variety of agencies. They may not have never looked at mid-size agencies before because
yeah.
they didn't think they were big enough to take on all their business. But they do look at them as being maybe a little bit more agile, more creative, have senior staff.
Have a specialism.
Specialism, yeah. Exactly. Come in for that. So that's bode really well for us.
Okay. And we'll come on to that, the sort of, I don't know about the reinvention of Hotwire, but where you're positioning it currently in a minute. But just on that, because it's quite interesting, you currently work a lot of your time in the US and that's
yep.
your home market, so to speak. How is that market as a public relations market currently? Is it one, because London's sort of growing and doing
yep.
doing well.
Yes.
But I get the impression that the US is an even happier place to be, shall we say.
It's a very positive place to be right now, for sure. At least for some agencies, I do think the big multinational holding companies are struggling for growth
yeah.
a bit. I think the average growth for the big guys is less than 1%. Average
yeah.
growth for midsize is more than 6%. So that's a big gap.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously harder to grow
yes,
a bigger firm at a similar percentage rate.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's well known that, yes, the big
yeah.
firms are struggling to grow, but
yeah.
they're still big, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
you know.
Oh, they are. They're
they
huge.
Are.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean, again, I think, you know, I proudly wear the badge of the midsize agency because I think we have a ton of opportunity
yeah.
today. We can be more agile as the market changes. we are, you know, we can add skill sets more quickly. We can, you know, we can sort of pivot a little bit more quickly, respond to client needs and those kinds of things.
But on the size side, you know, those big firms, we're all quite, we can discuss their lack of growth, et cetera, but they are still holding huge amounts of market share, aren't
they? Oh, they are. Absolutely.
When you look at the revenue that they've got.
Yep.
So just on that final question about the US market, where are the sort of hubs of the key hubs of PR these days? New York?
Yeah, it depends.
DC,
yeah, it depends on actually what market you're talking about.
Exactly.
And New York and San Francisco are probably the largest. The challenge there, though, is there is such a dearth of talent. We are the war for talent is probably the toughest in New York and San Francisco. And so more and more agencies are being creative, agencies like us, and opening up offices in the middle of the U.S. where there's incredibly great talent and actually some pretty cool companies that are headquartered there. If you look at Minneapolis, where we opened up an office, Target, Best Buy, United Health, Cargill, 3M, these are billion-dollar international companies that are all headquartered.
Right.
In Minneapolis. And while they aren't seen as being tech companies, today many of them describe themselves as a tech company or wanting to leverage their innovation to build their brand.
Right.
So, I should say Chicago, Atlanta, L.A., those are all markets on the consumer side that are pretty healthy.
So Brits want to go and work in – British PR people want to go in America, that there's a market for them.
Yes, there is. Oh, absolutely. Come on over.
Now, for 24 years, you positioned Eastwick as a sort of, well, the antithesis of a holding company structure. So why did you decide to join a networked agency like Hotwire?
Yeah. So, you know, my big beef is with the sort of the bureaucracy and size of the big, I call them the behemoth multinationals, the holding companies. I never really felt – I could have sold my company many, many times in over a 10-year period of time.
Right.
Every single one of the holding companies that I were talking about came calling for a couple of reasons. One, we were good midsize and the tech specialty, and we always had really strong brands on our roster.
Right.
That must have
been quite flattering to get.
Oh,
or,
it always –
Or did it become just a pain?
No, it's flattering and, you know, I would take meetings to learn from people and actually made some friends in the process. So some folks that I've stayed in touch with, I really respect and seen what they've done with their agencies.
I bet that was useful when it did come to sell.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like the first time you do something in life, guess what? You don't do it that well.
That's the main reason why I took the meetings is just to learn. But there, you could tell there was definitely cultural misalignment.
Right.
And that was because I was still working in the business. I wouldn't have ever sold to a company that I didn't want to go work for. And so that was just a driving factor for me all the time. So I wasn't looking to sell when Hotwire came calling.
But the two businesses had known each other for a while, right?
Yeah. We'd been partners. We were similar sizes. We were in the focus on the U.S. and used them as our partners in Europe. They were focused on Europe and used us in the U.S. as partners until they decided to start their own office in the U.S. And we broke up for a little while.
Oh, did you?
We did.
Okay, you had a row.
We did. But then we realized – I mean, Hotwire realized
well, they didn't have the scale.
They didn't have the scale. And, right. And we – you know, we – they wanted us to use them. They promised they wouldn't poach our clients and all of that, and they really wanted us to use them for their large tech, U.S.-based tech companies.
Right. So. And then because it was an interesting merger because you were – I don't know, were you bigger than Hotwire? You can't be far off.
We weren't bigger than Hotwire, but we were a similar size,
right. Which is quite – you know, it's not the normal way around, is it?
Which is why I would have never expected that they would come calling, which was a big surprise to me.
When they made the call, did you think, well, I should be taking over you?
Well, I didn't think that. I'm thinking, how are you going to do that? But I had actually forgotten that they were owned by a boutique network, so to speak, based in Australia. And it was Enero who really – Hotwire is the crown jewel in their portfolio of companies. And they really wanted to expand into the U.S. And so they told Hotwire to go make an acquisition.
Right.
And
you were the obvious fit.
We were the obvious fit. Yeah. Right. We really liked each other. We knew each other. Our clients were similar. Our approaches were similar. Values were similar.
What is that? I mean, you know, it's obviously so much. Only so much you can say to this question, but that due diligence process. Well, I mean, you know, what are you? How painful is it? You have to compare clients, or did you already know that? Do you have to go for
psychometric tests? Yeah,
What did you get up to?
That was a huge benefit. I mean, I know that there are acquisitions that happen all the time where the companies don't know each other. We felt like we sort of had a leg up on how successful it was going to be because we did know each other. But it's still really scary, and you do want to find you have to be careful about how much you share at what point of the conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
But I knew immediately, because I knew Hotwire, that this was going to be a different conversation. Literally every one of those other conversations that I had with holding companies, they would shake my hand and say, "Hi, Barbara, what are your margins and what is your growth track record for the last 3 years?" Like literally the first thing out of their mouth was financial metrics. Whereas Hotwire and Eastwick talked for a couple months before we actually even brought up financials.
Right.
It was really about...
What did you talk about?
We talked about our philosophy for how we grow the business.
Okay.
We talked about how we treat our clients, what markets we thought the opportunities were, what were the pros and cons of us coming together, where did we see alignment and misalignment, just the leadership team getting to know each other. So it was very, very different.
So you made up your mind quite early on in the process that you were, assuming that the financials worked out later down the road, you were up for this.
I did not jump right away.
Okay.
But I stayed very interested and kept getting more interested.
Right.
It was about 9 months from start to finish. So I wouldn't say that was overnight.
But these things are always going to take time.
They do.
I didn't mean it happened quickly. I just meant in your head, you were thinking, okay,
is for the first time something really interesting, and I could see myself possibly doing this.
Okay. Now, everyone of a business has to do this, but what's it like going from being bought by Hotwire to working for Hotwire?
Yeah. Yeah. Gosh, I think my journey was really different than most.
Okay.
First of all, I had for the first time in my life. Oh, that's not true. For the first time in over 25 years, I had a boss. So that was
exactly.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
I think the other thing, too, was I made the decision to immediately lose the brand that I had built for 25 years.
Yeah.
And I thought long and hard about that. But I felt like the integration of the two companies, it was truly that 1 + 1 = 3, which really sounds cliche, but I really bought into the fact that adding the two of us together, and I felt like that would happen quicker if we were under a single brand.
So you weren't Eastwick Hotwire for
No, we immediately went Hotwire and lost the Eastwick brand, which surprised a ton of people. They thought I would, because Eastwick had a very unique persona in the market.
And
we were
known
and a good, very good brand. And so people were really surprised at that. I think if I were to do a do-over, I would probably not have lost the Eastwick brand so quickly. Yes, we got calls from clients, current clients, past clients, current employees, past employees, were like, oh my gosh, the Eastwick brand, we can't, it's so unique and different. They really had bought into it. But I felt like I could get over that. What was the bigger issue is that the Hotwire brand was really not known in the U.S.
Yeah.
And there is a very well-known Hotwire travel company.
Yeah.
We are still battling with that challenge in the U.S.
Okay. Well, I guess, that's the difficulty with these things, isn't it?
Yeah, we definitely have to say I'm with Hotwire, not the travel company. And I get a lot of calls and LinkedIn messages from irate Hotwire travel.
Really?
Boy, oh, yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, it's unusual that you as the CEO of the acquired business then became CEO of the acquiring firm. But when Brendan Craigie left the business in 2017, something like that, you became the global CEO.
Yes.
How did that come about? What was that?
It was not part of the plan.
No.
At all, for sure. Typically, when people are, go into an earnout period, they stick to their knitting, their heads down, work really hard to...
Don't annoy anyone.
Yes. And just, get through the next number of years. I think for me, and there are some people who thought I was brilliant, and there were definitely people who thought I was crazy as, that I did it. But for me, I definitely believed so much in the combination of the two companies that we were building something great that I didn't mind being in charge of that. And I think the other thing was, you know, I would have way more control over my own destiny, being my own boss, so to speak, and driving the agency where I think it needed to go. And I think the reason why Enero really wanted Hotwire to buy Eastwick was a lot about my attitude towards growth and my reputation for innovation and sort of being bold.
Right.
And so far that's worked out well. I'm having a great time. I sat on the sidelines, saw lots of these things not go well. And again, knock on wood, I feel pretty lucky that I'm still enjoying myself.
Yeah, well, we might as well touch on that there, actually, Meg, because we talked about it before we came in and started recording the show, that the history of PR acquisitions...
Lousy.
It's not even true to say it's patchy, is it? It is...
It's bad.
There's hardly any that have gone well. Now, clearly, you're positioning yourselves as the one that, and I'm touching.
There have been others that have gone.
Yeah.
Well, very few. There have been many.
On one hand, probably.
Yes, yeah. Definitely. So less than one hand, probably. Yeah.
So, but I mean, listen, let's not go down. Why is that? Let's not go down the name and shame route.
I think it has to do with the first thing that I talked about is so much of the due diligence is around financials and not enough about shared values.
Okay.
I talk about this all the time. I will tell you a huge reason why our integration and merger was successful was because of the shared values. I also think, you know, it has to be a win-win-win. It has to be a win for the acquiring company, the acquired company, but also the clients who are working with those companies. And I think we just really managed the integration to the nth degree. I think we thought of everything. We really didn't take
it
for
a chance. Did you bring
in outside help? Or? We did not. We did it all ourselves.
Okay.
Actually, the Eastwick team drove most of it. My partner in crime in North America, Heather Kernahan, is just a master at execution. And I mean, literally, she has an MBA and she put it to work and
it's just all over it.
It was just all over the integration. And we literally had integration meetings for the entire first year of us being together. So we didn't just do the announcement and then go, okay, we're, you know.
Well, they do say that, don't they? You've got to do it quick because otherwise things start to rot without getting too emotive.
Yeah.
And you did seem to do it quite quick.
We did. We merged everything immediately. Our teams went to the very next day. Our teams were in shared offices.
Really?
Yeah. We did very, very quickly. We integrated systems very quickly.
Well, I suppose that was because Hotwire had a small team in the US and you didn't have a team in the UK. So
right.
That the shared office thing was relatively simple.
It
right?
was relatively yeah. simple, yeah.
Do you think the fact that the two firms were of a similar size helped? Just
yeah,
culturally?
I think so.
It was a merger of equals as
yes.
opposed to a takeover.
Yeah. It helped in many ways and there were also some challenges, not just about the size, but about a UK-based, very heavy cultured agency being run by a US CEO. And so I think our UK office was definitely our biggest office. And then all of a sudden they had a sibling that was similar size. And so we had to really focus on making sure that the new shiny thing, the US business, didn't overshine a really, really healthy, great business in the UK. And we were conscious of that in the beginning. And then, of course, I was incredibly conscious about not being the big, bad, ugly American coming in to run the business for not just the UK, but for our entire
business. It's also hard for us, but also the fact that you became the CEO maybe helped because you were it put all your staff at ease because
yes.
they weren't suddenly going to be at the behest of a bunch of arrogant Brits based in London or however they may have been seen
yes.
at the time.
But, yeah. We did try to take the best of either agency. We had this motto, same or better,
right.
Which means we wanted the experience to be either the same for clients or staff or better.
Right.
That we didn't want people to after the acquisition, think that they lost something. And so that mantra was kind of held us accountable for making the right decisions along the way.
Okay. Now, having said all that, at a time when networked agencies of the holding groups are, I don't know, somewhere between slightly out of fashion, stroke having a tough time.
Yeah.
Still big.
Yes.
Still much bigger
exactly,
than anyone else.
Exactly, of course.
Hotwire seem to be building a networked agency or trying to build a networked agency. Now, what's the logic of that?
Yeah, I see it as two different things. I think the big holding company model is different than what we're trying to do because we're still one Hotwire, one agency. I think there's a couple of key differences. We have a one P&L mentality. So there is no competition amongst our regions or even our departments within the agency. And there is absolutely they all admit it. I mean, they don't hide it. There is absolute competition amongst within agencies within holding companies. So because of the way that they're driven to multiple P&Ls. So a good example is clients they're looking for a global agency and they pick a global agency in the holding company, and they think they're going to be able to get access to these different regional offices when, in fact, the internal teams fight over that revenue. And they say, yes, we do have an office in France, but they have a minimum that you don't meet, so you can't use them. So there is definitely competition for that revenue. And we, from the very beginning, said, no, we're not going to do that because we're one global firm. We're going to do the best thing for the client. Okay. And that is definitely a big difference.
Does that mean – because I suppose one of the things that comes back to what you were saying earlier was that people tend to be having less agency records and more specialists and that type of thing.
And also blurring lines between agencies, I would say, too. So clients don't care if they're working with a PR firm, a digital firm, an ad agency, a creative shop. They just want good ideas. Build around sound strategy.
Yeah. So where are you positioning Hotwire on all of that? Because it's – or does it depend on who the customer is?
Yeah, we actually try not to talk about what type of agency we are as much. We describe ourselves as an integrated communications firm, which we are. But it's really more about what we do for clients. And for the most part, what we do is help companies, and we used to say we work with technology companies, but now we say we work with companies of all shapes and sizes who are wanting to build their brand value by leveraging technology and innovation stories to do that. And who better to help companies to do that than, you know, Hotwire, whose roots come from helping companies tell their innovation story.
Okay. Now, what's the so if you're trying to build this, I don't know, local global agency, that type of thing.
Glocal.
I'm not going to attempt to repeat that. So where are you now? Where have you got to? Obviously the UK, France,
we're in Europe. Well, in the US we have three offices, San Francisco, Minneapolis, New York. We're in London, Paris, Frankfurt, Munich, Milan, Madrid, Mexico City, Sydney, Australia, and just about to move into Asia.
Right. So it's a good footprint, isn't it? I mean,
sorry to interrupt, but we have three agencies who actually carry the Hotwire card that are branded co-branded affiliates that literally are like employees. They are on our Slack channels. They get access to everything that we give our employees access to, and that's in the Middle East, in the Netherlands, and in Latin America. So we're actually, you know, we consider ourselves more like 15. Offices.
Okay. So, and that's a good footprint, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the idea of a global PR firm, I'm not sure there is any such thing these days. They're multi-specialist. You know what I mean? You know, in terms of geographical markets.
Yeah. We do have one client where we service them in more than 20 countries. So we do tap into other partners outside of our immediate network.
And the model seems to be working, right? I mean, it's always hard for me to judge these things.
Knock on wood again.
People like you are going to tell people like me how well you're doing.
Yeah.
But you seem to be growing at a decent percentage.
Yeah, we are. And I think, again, I talk a lot about the opportunities that mid-size agencies have. So I think we're not the only ones that are growing. If you look at others who are selling a similar proposition around being big enough to be global and have a breadth of services, but small enough to provide that sort of bespoke experience and be able to be sort of a little bit more nimble and quite honestly more innovative in what they're doing. I think our competitors are doing pretty well.
Okay.
As well.
And have you done that growth? Is it taking Eastwick clients and sharing with Hotwire? Yeah,
both.
Vice versa?
It's actually both. I think our London team immediately, within a matter of months, landed $1 million worth more business.
Wow.
Because of the U.S. client saying, "Oh, we've been waiting for you to move into London." And they immediately just handed our business over to our London team, and now that's spread to Germany and France and. Not as much Italy, but Spain or Spanish team, Sydney for sure. We call it expand the base, which is if you look at the Hotwire roster, we are in amazing brands across the globe. And if some of those were working in multiple countries, but some of them just in one country, and then we're able to kind of expand that by being introduced to other regions, and that has worked really well for us.
Okay. And what's the longer-term plan? I get the feeling
you're
here to – you seem pretty ambitious.
I am. Yeah. I am, but not just – I call it ambitious balance, which is I have always been an employee-first organization. Right. And that's not because I'm super nice and want everything to be happy and fuzzy. It's because I think it's a really smart business decision. If you create a culture and opportunities for your employees beyond what anybody else is doing, you will attract the best talent. And if you attract the best talent, you will attract and keep good clients. So we really focus a lot on that. And so that's not just all about growth, right? That's about introducing innovative ways to do things, giving your employees wide variety of experiences. Those are all continue to be part of the plan. But if I think about what our strategy is for the next couple of years, it's definitely bringing in more creative and more strategic skills within the organization. And the way people were hiring is very different. We just hired a Harvard grad researcher.
Right.
Those types of skill sets we're bringing in. We have grown our creative, our digital, our sort of non-media relations skills within the organization, and organic growth is really important to us.
I suppose that's related to what you were saying earlier, that you're trying to sort of shape your business to what you see the market requires now.
Yeah.
And that comes through in the technology that you purchase, and I suppose also the skill sets within the business. So
Definitely two key things. And it's interesting. So we've always, no big surprise, we're a technology focused agency that we adopted technology ourselves. But I will tell you, that's not always the case. When we hire other people from other technology agencies, the first thing they say is, "Oh my gosh, you guys invest more in technology than any other place I've seen." So that's one area where we're innovating. One of the reasons why we're looking at even some more interesting technology like AI is we want to bring in different skill sets. We don't necessarily want to continue hiring, people straight out of college who are getting their first comms job and really going to spend that first year doing clipping reports and, that kind of stuff. That's not how you sort of grow your next generation of strategists and so forth. So if we can figure out a way to automate that early part with technology, that allows us to hire more people with strategic skill sets, higher value skill sets, I would say.
But what is it you're doing differently then to other agencies who out there that you're beating on growth rates at the moment? It's the type of people you're hiring? I'm just trying to work that one through.
I would say there are five things that we're focused on right now. I think the combination of those sets us apart. One is innovative programs and services. Everything from our pop-up strategy, how we move into new markets, some of the products and services we're building around strategy and marketing services, our CMO in residence program, where we actually have a CMO in residence that comes in,
yep,
that rotates out and gives us that. You talk about that. How are you building your services? Well, we're listening to CMOs about what they need and what they're looking for from their agencies. So I'd say innovative products and services. We are a challenger brand, and we not only love working with challenger brands and have a lot of experience with that, but we're also working with the big legacy brands who are being disrupted by those challengers. So I think the fact that we are willing to be a little bit bolder is one thing that people associate with us. We are really trying to differentiate ourselves with the type of services and opportunities we give our clients. Global travel is one. In any given day in Hotwire, you probably have 10 different people sitting in offices that are not their home offices. And we do that because we specifically fund travel that we don't rely on clients paying for, that we build that into our budget for Hotwire employees to go work in other regions.
Right.
And we don't do that just because, you know, it would be fun for someone from San Francisco to work in London. It's because we have global teams that work together on clients. And until those teams really know each other, they're not going to really be able to take advantage of why clients hire global agencies. So that's something we definitely do. Our investment in learning and development, I know a lot of agencies say that, but if you actually we know we're spending more dollars per head on development than most agencies, especially for our size. One of the things that is also a key tenet of ours is, and this comes directly from the CMOs we work with, is they want to work with specialists. They don't necessarily want to work with generalists. They want to know when they're working with someone in their market that that person is an expert in their market, or if they're working on a social program, that person is an expert in social. So we're committed to developing sector and program specialists within our organization. So we have someone who's building a health tech practice, an auto tech practice, who's a fintech expert. We have someone who's a specialist in paid social, those types of things. So that's something that we're committed to.
Barbara, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the PR Moment podcast, produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
If you'd enjoyed the show, please do review us on iTunes and give us a decent rating.